Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 114 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling When Scientists Speak Falling Numbers, Farmers Should Listen. The second episode of three that I've produced from attending the second Falling Numbers Summit held in Portland in late January 2019. This podcast is on the long side, but that's because the Falling Numbers Challenge is so important to farmers in eastern Washington, where discounts from the phenomenon have cost farmers millions, possibly hundreds of millions of dollars over the last decade. The Washington Grain Commission began funding research on falling numbers in 2011 and has directed more than $500,000 toward various projects since then. Many of the researchers you'll hear from in this podcast used commission funding as leverage to conduct their research. Not everyone who spoke during the summit is included here, a matter of the space-time continuum, as in this podcast doesn't have the space to make time available to everyone. But even without including everyone, there's plenty here to marvel over when it comes to research conducted on farmers' behalf. I took photos of many of the PowerPoint slides mentioned by the researchers and have posted them on the Washington Grain Commission Facebook page. I'm not making promises, but I will make a yeoman's effort to post the slides in the order of the speakers of this podcast. If you're not a Facebook fan, never fear, you don't need the slides to grasp what is being said. Camille Stieber, the Agricultural Research Service scientist who has taken the lead on falling numbers research, opened the summit, and she opens this podcast looking back at the first summit held in February 2017 in Spokane. Several goals were established at that meeting. One was to improve the coefficient of variation, that is, the variability in falling numbers test, from 5% to 1%, while reducing the standard deviation in falling number scores from 30 seconds to 5 seconds on two tests run at the same time in the falling numbers machine. Another goal was to revise the Federal Grain Inspection Service rule to have a more standardized protocol, that is, so that everyone everywhere is doing the test the same way. As you'll hear ahead, progress is being made in these as well as other areas. I'm not sure if it was because of the government shutdown, which only ended 2 days before the summit, but instead of the major professors, many of the presentations were provided by master's and PhD students along with postdocs. Stieber provided a context for the effort that is underway, as well as explaining what the falling numbers test is. She refers to a Stephen Delwich. He's a scientist with the ARS in Beltsville, Maryland. Bear in mind, each presentation ran for more than 30 minutes, which means for the individuals I've included here, north of 2 hours. Presentations have been edited with the goal of providing not a full picture, but rather a glimpse of the research that has been set into motion as a result of the painful discounts farmers have suffered from low falling numbers. Here's Stieber.
So the falling numbers test is the test that farmers love to hate. Basically, what's done is the 300 grams of grain are ground into meal, whole meal. You weigh out 7 grams adjusted for moisture. You add 25 milliliters of water. This is then put in a shaker, this tube, and then you add this stirrer to the top. And the two tubes with the stirrers are placed in the falling numbers machine at the same time, and it mixes up and down. The stirrer goes up and down, mixing to basically make a gravy out of that slurry of wheat flour and water. And then once it's finished 60 seconds of mixing, it drops the stirrer and measures the amount of time in seconds it takes the stirrer to fall to the bottom of the tube. And right now, the standard at which we begin to have a discount is when we're below 300 seconds. You can see that you can run two at the same time. So right now we're talking about error comparing two technical reps of the same sample run at the same time was what came out of the Falling Numbers Summit. You can also run replicates of the same thing at different times. This is from work by Chantel Martinez, where she had a mapping population. And she was looking at the relationship between replicate one and replicate two on falling numbers run at the same time, run the same day but consecutively, and run on different days. And you can see that this looks more like a line, like a correlation of one, when you run the two samples in the machine at the same time. It's still not so bad when you run them the same day just consecutively, but it starts to get a bit more randomized looking when you run them on different days. And Stephen Delwich has tried to address that since the Falling Numbers Summit in 2017. The old way of correcting, we did a correction of falling number based on altitude. So the deal is that the boiling point of water depends upon atmospheric pressure, right? Which means that you're going to have differences in the falling numbers test at different altitudes because water boils at a different temperature. And what Stephen Delwich has done is he's looked at a set of samples at their falling number at different barometric pressures. And he developed a calibration that could correct continuously for barometric pressure, because his goal is to reduce that enormous error we see on different days, likely because the weather was different on those 2 days and the barometric pressure was quite different. The thing is, though, this calibration works for the set of samples that he had. One thing I would really like to know is if FIGUS implements this as the new correction, which is the plan for 2019, I'm interested in knowing how that will reduce the variability in real-world samples when we look at, say, samples run by FIGUS or by the Quality Lab. But something you need to keep in mind is that biology is probably one of the biggest sources of variation in falling number. This was from a paper where they used NIR on a combine to estimate the falling number over a farmer's field as the wheat was harvested. And you can see that, you know, the falling number ranges from, below 200 to, in some cases, over 400 where it's dark. And this is just because you get so many microclimates, especially, you know, say in the Palouse, where you have quite a bit of variation in the hills, whether you're in the valley or at the top of a hill. I don't think we're going to be able to address that part of the variation. I think Andrew Ross is going to talk a bit about sampling error. Unfortunately, we will not hear from Stephen Delwich. He was not able to make it due to the shutdown of the federal government. But we have some other folks who are working on trying to come up with what could be more accurate, cheaper, faster, and maybe even non-destructive methods of looking at falling numbers. Then there's the idea of NIR on flour. Stephen Delwich and I had a collaboration where we looked at that, and we're not able to come up with a good calibration that worked repeatedly across different environments in different years. However, I've been approached by Ziwu Zhang, or Jiwu Zhang, if I try to pronounce it correctly, and he is a good mathematician. His student, James Shen, is going to talk about their work to use better mathematical modeling methods, machine learning and neural networks with larger data sets, to see if they can both make the NIR work. And they're also going to be working with hyperspectral analysis of whole grains to see if we could develop a non-destructive test so that you could run a test on the same sample more than once. Finally, improving communication. Stephanie Schoberg is going to talk about her work to categorize varieties with respect to their falling number, to develop a modeling system, to look at data over multiple years in many environments, to see if she can come up with a fair statistical way to rank varieties. Right now, I post these data, the falling numbers data from the WSU variety trials on the web, but I'm very careful not to tell you which varieties to choose, right? Because I could be accused of making a subjective decision. Stephanie is going to tell you about better math to work at that. There are two major genetic causes of low falling numbers: genetic susceptibility to LMA and genetic susceptibility to pre-harvest sprouting. Pre-harvest sprouting is the initiation of germination on the mother plant when we get a rain event before harvest, but after the grain is mature. Late maturity alpha amylase is actually more of a developmental defect where susceptible varieties, when they experience a cold shock during late grain filling, wind up producing alpha amylase in an untimely way that then is still there when the grain matures and then causes a low falling number. A lot of the problem in breeding for falling numbers has been that we have had inconsistent selection for higher falling number varieties, mostly because we've gone, this is a timeline of what I, from memory, can recall in the way of low falling numbers events. We've gone as long as 10 years, 13 years, but for the 2006 event without a low falling numbers problem. The events that we had in 2011 and 2013 were mostly pre-harvest sprouting. 2016 and 2018 had problems with late maturity alpha amylase. So we need to address both of these problems. They're genetically distinct, so we have to have separate selection for them in the breeding programs. Late maturity alpha amylase, Chloe Liu Cheng is going to tell you about her work developing a greenhouse LMA screening program, identifying temperatures that cause LMA, and also, you know, her beginning work looking at mapping for LMA.
Next up is Stephanie Schoberg, who is pursuing her PhD in crop sciences at Washington State University. Schoberg is crunching the data coming out of the variety testing program trials. So far, she has 2,500 data points spanning 3 years, 53 environments, and 157 genotypes. For those in need of a history lesson, Schoberg did an excellent job of summing up the number of falling number events.
We had a hiatus, I guess you could say, of no low falling numbers between the years 1998 and 2011, split up by the one time in 2006, which I know is something that people remember. But the most recent events in 2013, 14, and 16 have been the most severe, and they've affected the majority of locations in Washington, especially 2016. In 2011, the Washington Grain Commission decided to fund the Stieber Lab to run the Stieber Lab, the Pumphrey Lab, and the Carter Labs to run falling numbers on all the cereal variety trials. The WSU Cereal Variety Testing Program was running in Washington. And again, just to reiterate, in the soft white winter wheat trials in 2013, 14, and 16, we had a serious problem of low falling numbers. Sometimes over 50% of the locations were experiencing low falling numbers. What Camille has done is put all of this data on her website. And it's accessible to everyone, farmers alike, and you can look at it in a couple different ways. So just run through an example. You could look at it by year. We'll look at it using 2016. And then you can look at it by location or variety. We'll look at it by location. Within location, you can look at it within rainfall zones. So let's take an example of Colton. In Colton in 2016, you can see that there was severe falling number problems in a couple of the varieties, although a lot of these were, which are below 300, as indicated by yellow, were still a problem. So the red horizontal line indicates 250. This is just for anyone who's interested in looking at it, but this is the way we have this data for us right now. An example of why farmers are a little confused, and even just someone who's looking at the data could be a little confused, is because when you look at one variety, let's take Zerfa as an example. On the left, you see Dayton 2013. All the varieties are in green. Out of all of the varieties, only two of them had less than 300 second falling numbers. So Zerfa ends up being one of the highest here, 435. But this is an environment that doesn't have any low falling numbers issues. And then let's look at Elmira 2016 here. 31 of the varieties in that location were less than 300 seconds. In this case, Zarifa is 257, so not great, but still better than Brill, 216. But then, you know, we think, okay, well, if based on this, Zarifa is better than Brill. Well, let's look over here. In Fairfield 2013, 46 of the varieties had lower than 300 falling number. And what do you know? Zarifa and Brill are not the same ranking. So you have this flip-flop in ranking. And that's due to something that we call genotype by environment interaction. And so we need to understand a little bit better what's going on in these locations. And what we can do to utilize the information that we know and make a decision from that. We can look at and identify varieties that have better performance overall versus those that don't, that maybe have a high mean, but they still perform poorly in bad environments. And what we then did is we took the no event data out, and we can almost see a better visualization of those that are bad. Are bad, but there are some that are good. But we're not able to really parse out exactly what's happening. And so a limitation is that we don't get that nonlinear pattern. What's really interesting, and especially for our, the Stieber lab that I'm in, is that this area over here, that's LMA environments. And it shows you that they're actually not informative, really at all in terms of overall performance. And that's the struggle that seems to be a problem with LMA, is that it's difficult to select for that phenotype. The bad are always bad. Those are the, even in when we look at it as in mean, in terms of mean, but the good are the hard ones. We want to be able to tell farmers what the falling number performance is and also what the stability of that is, because that's the more important thing for planning for the future.
Schoberg proposed adding two new entries to the variety selection tool that WSU hosts on its small grain website, one for overall falling number performance and one for stability, a solution she says is better than farmers trying to look back over years of data from every location. I'd go one further and suggest that the information be included in the Washington State Crop Improvement Certified Seed Buying Guide. Knowledge is power, and the more knowledge farmers have about the varieties they grow, the better it is for everyone. With Schoberg's primer under your belt, listen in next to James Chen, who is pursuing his crop and soil sciences PhD at WSU. Chen is a student of Zhao Zhang, who holds the Washington Grain Commission-funded Distinguished Professorship for Statistical Genomics at WSU. At Zhang's direction, Chen is investigating several different methods to determine falling number values more quickly. The one that perked up ears at the summit uses hyperspectral images in combination with facial recognition technology and machine learning to make the determination. Chen is obviously a bright guy because I didn't understand a lot of what he was saying, and you might not either. But I wanted to at least give you a taste of this new approach.
So, the facial recognition has been known for a while, so it's also make a huge success. You can see like self-driving car or like face ID on your iPhone. So we also wonder like if we can introduce this technology into the kernel recognition, like a kernel pattern recognition, like how people do in your facial recognition. So later we introduce this image we call the hyperspectral imaging. So that is, we don't need to grind the kernel into the meal, but we can also keep the complete kernel. And what's different from the common image is, here we have no we not only have RGB band, now we have a 200 band, so it will become the 3D cube. So it can keep both variation, spatial variation, but also the variation between different kernel from the same variety. This is our studio. So we use this camera, Spatium IQ. It is the very first commercialized camera that be able that allow a user to acquire the hyperspectral imaging. So the basic setup is quite simple. So you simply need a hologram light source and a table to hold your thimble, and a tripod to hold your camera like you do with your Canon camera. So then you can acquire the thimble. Here, the last slide kind of summarizes the current progress. So the very top row is our current method by exploring number. It's at highest accuracy, but it's slow, and you have to grind it to flour. Where the second, if you do the 1D spectrometer measurement, you might get a median accuracy, like 7 or 80% of the correlation. And it also is fat, but you have to find a machine to grind into meal equally. And the third one is, for now, it still has a relatively low accuracy. But when they getting mature more, it will be the effective way to predict your phone number. And also, you can keep the wheat kernel sound that you don't need to grind into to meal.
If Chen can correlate images of kernels with specific falling number values, he will have definitely built a better mousetrap. It could be a game changer, but we're talking about research that is still in its infancy. Another researcher who presented at the summit who is pursuing a new test is Amber Havermal. She is working on what's called an ELISA method to determine falling numbers. Although it would destroy the sample, it could potentially be an easy-to-use test strip that county elevators could use quickly to separate the high falling numbers grain from the stuff below 300. Next up is Chloe Liu, a WSU master's student. She provides background about the differences between pre-harvest sprout events and LMA events, something researchers are able to determine by the location of the alpha amylase in the kernel. PHS is located at the embryo end of the kernel, whereas LMA is scattered throughout the aleron layer of the seed.
Instance, we have alpha amylase evenly distributed on both ends of the grain, so therefore we conclude that it was an LMA event in this location in 2014. And in the end, by looking at the sound falling number and low alpha amylase on either end of the grain, so we say that there is no event. Jose Barrero, as somebody who was associated with Maris's lab, has said in the literature in 2013, the synthesis of alpha amylase in LMA-affected grains rarely exceeds the amount typical of the early stages of germination. However, in 2016, we had multiple LMA events resulting in very low falling numbers and high alpha amylase. So our goal right now is to improve our greenhouse LMA testing to the point where we could confidently map the loci with LMA susceptibility or resistance. In Australian wheat, that the susceptible line, their window appeared to be 20 to 30 days post-synthesis, whereas there is no induction in their resistant line. And we repeated the same experiment with our soft white spring line, WA8124. Our window seemed to be a little earlier than the Australian facultative wheat, which is around 24 day post-synthesis, that is equivalent to 516 ground degree days.
Here, Liu talks about research attempting to induce the LMA phenomenon in the greenhouse. Her results give us new insight about what prompts the LMA phenomenon. If Liu's right, it's not what we previously thought.
So therefore, we concluded that the heat shock did not induce LMA, but a cold night is the key. And our original conditions, the 18 and 7 and a half, work with us the best. So in the end, our LMA window in terms of northwest wheat appeared to be earlier than the Australian facultative wheat. While testing the RAL parents lines, I did learn that the timing of the window varies, depends on the biology. The LMA was induced by the cold shock, and so don't have to worry about the heat, extreme heat in the summer.
One of the things I like about scientists is that they go where the data leads them. In the case of what causes LMA, Liu's data shows that it's the cold at a critical growth stage, not the heat, that causes the problem. Finally, I end this podcast with the reminder that LMA is the new kid on the block. Pre-harvest sprout has been around as long as there has been agriculture, and it too is the subject of research in the Northwest and around the country. Chantal Martinez, a postdoc at Cornell University in New York State, earned her PhD at WSU. She returned for the Falling Numbers meeting to report on her research.
As you know, pre-harvest sprouting is when germination occurs while still on the mother plant. A large portion of the genetic susceptibility and tolerance is due to seed dormancy. Dormancy is the inability to germinate even under favorable conditions. Susceptibility to pre-harvest sprouting really depends on the day that it reaches physiological maturity. At physiological maturity, each variety is at its most dormant. It can lose dormancy through a period of dry storage, also what I'll call after ripening. And so after physiological maturity, a susceptible line will lose dormancy much more, a lot quicker than a tolerant line.
One of the reasons Martinez went back to Cornell for her postdoctorate work is because a place like New York State has a lot more PHS than the Pacific Northwest. But her work while she was in Washington is still yielding results. Consider what she discovered about club wheat varieties.
Very briefly, we did get our most significant QTL on chromosome 2D that we saw in multiple environments and in every day of misting was really, really close to the club locus. And we don't know exactly if that is that entirely tied to the club gene or is there just a high dormancy gene found in the clubs that we tested. It's hard to see, but the majority of the clubs had the tolerant gene region, and only two of the clubs we tested did not have that tolerant region. It's an interesting tale to possibly tease out in the future.
That club wheat sure is interesting. A breeder once told me it's not the characteristics of the club head or kernel that makes the subclass of soft white special. It's what breeders have been able to stuff into it, including, as it turns out, greater seed dormancy. I hope you enjoyed episode 114 of Wheat All About It, or what I called When Scientists Speak Falling Numbers, Farmers Should Listen, about presentations from the second Falling Numbers Summit held in Portland January 29th and 30th. Please join me here again next week for my third Falling Numbers episode when I'll be talking with Oregon State University's Andrew Ross, a scientist, a baker, a surfer, an Australian, and a man who has been pursuing falling numbers answers for more than 30 years. Meanwhile, don't forget, if you want to know more about the highs and lows of falling numbers, Google Steber Lab, that's S-T-E-B-E-R, Lab, to check out the research that is being done. Please, if you're learning something from these podcasts, pass along the knowledge. Let friends know about the podcast and teach them how to subscribe. And then come back again next week for another episode of Wheat All About It!
We're all children of a special treat, a miracle of nature that we just call wheat. A crop that's in the Bible, a crop that's in our bread, a crop that's filled our bellies and held us in good stead. Through a history of starvation and times of want and woe, wheat has been our savior.
There's always lots of problems when we have enough to eat, but there's only one dilemma when it's not enough wheat. We feed you.